Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, the cliche is that all politics are local. Maybe this year all local politics are national. Here is Vice President Joe Biden, who went on ABC This Week yesterday to help Democratic congressional candidates from around the country in the midterm elections.
It's just going to take time. This is July. The election's not till November. And I think we're going to have to affirmatively make our case. I think we can make it. And especially in the context of who's going to be opposing us. Compared to the alternative, I think we're going to get a fair amount of credit by November, and I think we're going to do fine.
And so here come the midterm elections, with a debate revolving around the major actions taken by the Obama administration and the Democratic Congress: the stimulus, health reform, Wall Street reform, and stepping up the Afghanistan war. And this is a very different midterm election from the last two Democratic presidencies of Clinton and Carter, perhaps more similar to the Reagan midterm in 1982, and we'll talk about why, with Susan Page, USA Today's Washington Bureau Chief, and Jackie Kucinich, Washington correspondent for Roll Call. And yes, you've heard that last name before. Hi, Susan. Hi, Jackie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
And Jackie, some listeners were asking after the last time you were on recently, are you related to Dennis Kucinich? And the answer is yes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He's your dad?
He is indeed.
So how does he feel about you not going into the politician business, but into the scrutinizing politician's business?
That's something you'll have to have him on for.
All right. That's fair enough. So, Jackie, how much do you think all politics are national in this midterm election year, from Cleveland to Phoenix to wherever?
I actually would disagree with that. I would say all politics are local, and I would use the example of the Tim Burns, Mark Critz race in Pennsylvania 12. It was a special election, of course, to replace the late Jack Murtha. And that was a race where some of the critics of Republicans said they tried to nationalize the race. And at the end of the day, these people didn't really care about Nancy Pelosi. That wasn't getting them a job. That wasn't a steel mill closing. And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, this is about economies, and the economy is very much a local thing right now.
Susan, how much would you agree with that?
I guess I would disagree with Jackie, although I know she knows a lot more about House races than I do. But I'm just back from Colorado, where I went to do a story on the Senate race there, a very close race there for Democrats to hold that Senate seat. And I'm telling you, when you talk to voters, they talk about the economy and health care and climate change. They talk about President Obama and their views on him. So I heard a lot about national issues and about views of the president, and not very much about Colorado-specific issues. I think with midterm elections, especially when you've got a president that's done as much as President Obama has done, it's hard to make these elections not be a referendum on him.
I would agree that Senate races are a little bit different, because you have a whole state rather than, you know, a very specific area. So I would agree that it is a little bit of a different bent when it comes to Senate races.
And Susan, on the Joe Biden clip we played about the Democrats not getting credit for their accomplishments with their low poll numbers, I mean, both parties have low poll numbers, but the Democrats are in power, so they're at risk. Is it that they're doing big things that people don't like or don't yet like? Or maybe, as Paul Krugman in his column today and others suggest, looking at history, it doesn't matter what a president's policies are if the economy has people worried and unemployed when the midterms come around.
I think that's right. I mean, when times are good, presidents get a lot of credit, even if they didn't have much to do with it. And when times are bad, the same thing applies. I actually interviewed President Obama briefly on this very point about 6 weeks ago, and he said that no one's going to give him credit on the accomplishments he's made until things are better in their own personal lives, until they have a job or their brother-in-law has been able to get a job or they're no longer worried about their house being foreclosed on. So
all politics aren't just local but personal.
I guess so.
But it's very different from the Clinton and Carter midterm elections, isn't it, where those presidents got stymied by their Democratic Congresses and couldn't pass much of their agendas. Remember, Clinton health reform failed in 1994, and then the Democrats lost control of Congress. Obama has gotten these big things done, at least legislatively, stimulus, health reform, bank reform. Do you think that matters politically, Susan?
I do. I don't think it, as you said in the introduction, this reminds me less of those Democratic examples than of the one with Ronald Reagan in 1982. You know, he had come in, he had done some big things in his first 2 years, but the economy was bad, unemployment must have been about 10%. It was high. I can't remember exactly where it was, and you had this sort of reaction, and then you saw him rebound, of course, to that remarkable 49-state reelection. Just 2 years later. So I don't know if that rebound's going to happen for President Obama, but I think there are a lot of parallels with President Reagan. You know, another parallel is President Reagan did some things that made some Americans uncomfortable. They thought he was going too far, too conservative, building up defense spending too much, and so on. And you see that kind of discomfort now with President Obama, too, going in the other direction.
How do you see that? Same question, Jackie. Certainly the Democrats are trying to hammer that home when these polls come out showing Obama with record low poll numbers for his presidency. They're saying, look, Reagan was in the same position and in large measure for the same reason with high unemployment at that time. How do the Republicans respond to that? Or what do you think as an analyst?
I think at the end of the day, I think everything has to do with the economy and just what you were saying before. If the economy gets better, things are going to look up for Democrats. If it continues to worsen or if it stays stagnant and people still don't have jobs, then you're going to have Republicans saying, see, these policies aren't working. Look, we can do something better, and that will get them ahead. But until the economy gets better, I think the Democrats are going to have a heck of a whole plethora of races on their hands.
And so for the Republicans, do something better, but what? Because they seem to be running on disapproval of the spending in the Democratic bills, but staunchly refusing to say what they would cut. In fact, they're running as if the deficit is the key issue that's going to drive turnout rather than unemployment itself, it sounds to me. Here is a 90-second clip from Meet the Press yesterday between host David Gregory and the head of the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, Congressman Pete Sessions. David Gregory first.
What painful choices are Republicans prepared to make? Are they going to campaign on repealing health care, for instance, repealing financial regulation? Would you just like to see those two things done?
Well, first of all, let's go right to it. We're going to balance the budget. We should live within our own means, and we should read the bills and work with the American people.
How do you
people.
Do it? Tell me how you do it. Name a painful choice that Republicans are prepared to say we have to make.
Well, first of all, we need to make sure that as we look at all that we are spending in Washington, D.C., with not only the entitlement spending, but also the bigger government, we cannot afford anymore. We have to empower the free enterprise system. See, this is where...
Congressman, these are not specifics.
Oh, they are.
Voters get tired of that. You want to deal with entitlement spending? Will you raise the retirement age on Social Security? Will you cut benefits of Social Security? Repeal health care?
Let's go right to it.
Do it.
And Chris talked right about it. He wants to diminish employers' abilities to be able to be competitive across this world. We need to make sure that we allow employers, which was in that 52-page report that was presented to the President of the United States by CEOs in this country, we need to go back to the exact same agenda that is empowering the free enterprise system rather than diminishing.
Senator, I'm sorry, I'm not hearing an answer here on specific what painful choices to really deal with the deficit. Is Social Security on the table? What will Republicans do that would give them, like 94, there was a contract with America. What are voters going to say, hey, this is what Republicans will say yes to?
All right. And on they went.
Hey, it wasn't kudos. Entertaining Meet the Press, that's for sure.
Kudos to David Gregory for pursuing the question. Because, you know, when you're doing, as you know, Brian, from doing so many interviews yourself, it's easy to ask the question once and have the person not answer it and just let it go. And right. He was very persistent there.
Indeed. And what happened there is clear. Does it matter? My guest, Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, and Jackie Kucinich, reporter for Roll Call. Does it matter politically, Susan, in your opinion, that the Republicans won't say what it is they'll cut as they run on a balanced budget?
I think it probably doesn't matter very much. I mean, you is this a choice or a referendum, this election? And you heard Vice President Biden talking about the alternative. He wants to make this a choice between the Democratic plan and the Republican plan. Pete Sessions clearly wants it to be a referendum, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down on how things are going with the people in charge. And as frustrating as it is for Democrats, I think history tells us that the referendum model is one that has some success.
And in fact, you mentioned how the Democrats are trying to run on it as a choice election. The language is very interesting. A choice between the change that they've been bringing or returning to the Bush policies that got us into this mess, as they would like to frame it, while the language is different on the Republican side, of course. Here is Biden again making that Democratic point on ABC this week.
So much stuff has been flowing our way, and we're facing a bunch of guys who are good guys, but they're all about repeal and repeal what we're doing and go back, repeal the incentives for industry to invest in solar energy, repeal the health care bill that allows you to keep your kid on your health care policy, pre-existing conditions can't deny you policies, etc.
All right, Joe Biden. And some of that was not accurate at the end. The Republicans say they would keep the provision that lets you keep your health insurance without pre-existing conditions. But the Republicans, Jackie, are saying repeal and replace for things like bank reform and health reform.
Right.
The Democrats are mocking it as repeal and repeat, as we heard from Biden there, meaning repeat Bush. Any sense that that national congressional message is working or not working on either of those sides?
I think with Republicans, they have a lot of incentive to not have an agenda, to not present anything, because they can't be criticized on anything that they don't present. They can be criticized for not having an agenda, but then they can just say, well, this isn't about us. This is about Democrats. So I don't think that the at this point, I don't know that the repeal and them mocking them for having not having an agenda is really taking hold. Now, I haven't been traveling as much as Susan has, but my feeling is that you don't see a lot of that resonating yet. Whether it will come August when everyone's out there pounding the pavement, that's another question entirely.
And Susan, you know, you said historically the referendum model tends to hold sway politically. They don't actually hold the party out of power responsible for coming up with alternative solutions. And I'll note that here in our area, Chris Christie ran on making big budget cuts last fall and balancing the way out of whack New Jersey budget. And he refused to delineate what cuts he would make despite being challenged repeatedly by the press. And he won. So that's an example that even in the current climate, that holds.
And, you know, one of the things that we're all watching for is whether this is going to be one of those tied elections that kind of wash everything out of its path so that some of the customary expectations of campaigns just don't apply, like who's the better candidate or who's got the most money. If you've got a title election, which in this case would probably be on the Republican side helping them, then it probably doesn't matter very much if Democrats criticize Republicans for not being specific enough. Now, if things look feel a little better and there's a little less of this kind of national sentiment that overtakes everything, then you would have some elections, some contests where Democrats could effectively make the case, perhaps, that got a plan and the other side doesn't.
But on this idea of it being a tidal election year, we just had a tidal election year in 2008.
We did.
Where Obama got swept in by a larger margin than almost anybody anticipated, you know, a few months before that election. And, of course, the Democrats in Congress, their numbers, you know, it exploded so much. Is the mood of the country, and maybe it is, so volatile that you can have a tidal election one direction in 2008 with massive rejection of the Bush administration's policies, both on foreign policy and on domestic economic policy, and then a tidal election with massive rejection of Obama just 2 years later and the Democrats?
Well, Brian, I would say that it's very easy to envision that, because when you have a title election, you get the support of a lot of people who are not really with you, right? There were some moderate Republicans that were mad at Bush that went for Obama, and independents overwhelmingly went for Obama. They were very unhappy with Bush, but they're not very tied closely or with any, they don't have any history being tied to the Democratic Party. So if things continue to go bad, they continue to be unhappy with the direction of the country, it's not that big a leap for them to switch to the other side. They're not moored or anchored on one side or the other.
But Jackie,
I would add that they also had a lot of people come out to vote that had never come out to vote before. And if they're not excited to come out to vote for Democrats, they're just not going to show up. So you're not going to have as many people voting.
Right. Turnout, as opposed to trying to swing the swing voters. And a comment on our webpage from Gene in New Jersey says, my take, the Democrats are afraid of the Republicans, and the Republicans are terrified of the Tea Party.
Everyone's afraid.
Yeah, so everyone will say what they think someone else wants to hear. And so, as you know, Jackie, the Democratic politicians are getting a lot of critique from the left flank of their own party for not either doing as a matter of policy or running on what they really believe in, because they're so afraid of the centrist swing voters or attacks by the Tea Party, and that's going to leave, you know, that base that turned out in such large numbers in 2008 home.
I don't know that the Democrats are as worried about the Tea Party as the Republicans are worried about the Tea Party. And the Tea Party is still, aside from a few special elections, they've been untested in a national with a bunch of races going on. So that's something I've been watching very closely, that just how they actually are going to affect this election. Because you do see a lot of Republicans not going out there and saying what they necessarily think, because they're worried about how this might affect Tea Parties. Depends on the district, of course, but there's definitely that hesitance out there.
So, Susan, finish up with your front page article today on Colorado as an example of all of this, where the fracturing of both parties is being seen in the primary election being run at this moment.
You know, you see the appointed Senator Michael Bennet with a real challenger, Andrew Romanoff, the former Speaker of the House in the Colorado legislature. And the problem that the Democrats have is that there are a lot of Democrats that are kind of disheartened. They haven't seen as much change as they had hoped to when President Obama was elected 2 years ago. Some of them aren't happy with spending and the expansion of the war in Afghanistan. So Democrats are kind of downbeat. On the other hand, establishment Republicans had just had their clock cleaned by the Tea Party forces in Colorado. There was an establishment candidate, Jay Norton, the former lieutenant governor, who is being challenged in a very serious way by Ken Buck, who is a county prosecutor. Ken Buck is one of those Tea Party candidates. The Tea Party is clearly behind his rise. But I've got to say, he's in many ways pretty attractive, dynamic candidate. And when I interviewed him, he was clearly sliding toward the center in preparation for a general election.
Is that because he sees some of the poll numbers in other races where Tea Partiers have won the primaries, like in Nevada, where Harry Reid was down and now he's up against Sharron Engel after she said things like, you know, Second Amendment solutions, wink, wink, to our problems?
Absolutely. He's clearly learned the lessons of Rand Paul and Sharron Engel. He's not making the kind of statements that could get him in real trouble in a general election, and he is trying to moderate some of the statements that he made when he was really trying to gin up the Tea Party support. So I think this is definitely a race to watch, and it's one of those toss-up Senate races that if the Republicans manage to run the board, you could even envision, although it's a long shot, a Republican takeover of the Senate.
Jackie Kucinich, reporter for Roll Call. Susan Page, USA Today's Washington Bureau Chief. It's only the beginning. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, House of Cards author William Cohan on why he thinks Goldman Sachs should go back to just being an investment firm. Stay with us.